All right, we're on the top of Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph, second line down. Anu Rabbanan, Sukkah Gzula, V'amisachech B'shut Arabim, a stolen Sukkah, or someone who puts up Schach in Rishut Abim, which is also a form of Gzela, because he's Gozel the Rabim, he's utilizing the public space. Rabbi Eliezer Pusel, V'chachamim Machshirim. Rabbi Eliezer says this is problematic, whereas the Chachamim say it's fine. So Amar Rav Nachman, Machloket B'shetokef et Chaviro V'yotziyo Misukoto. The machloket here is where he tosses his buddy out of the sukkah, comes in there and forces him out of the sukkah. Rabbi Ezer the Tamei, and Rabbi Ezer is the shitato domar. Ein adam yotzei de chovato b'sukkato shel chaveiro. This is Rabbi Ezer the shitato that it has to be sukkah shelcha, has to be your sukkah. And since it's not your sukkah because you tossed the guy out, therefore you're not yotzei. I karka nigzalet sukkah gzulahi. So there are two possibilities. Rashi over here notes that Rabbi Elezer, the Shitato Behemet, believes that Karka is Nigzelet. So the Minmon of Shachir is not really necessary in Rabbi Elezer, the Shitato. But the Gemara is saying that either way, even if you don't hold of Rabbi Elezer Shita that Karka is Nigzelet, either way it would work. So which is, I Karka Nigzelet, Suka Gzulahi. If you can steal Karko, then this is a stolen sukkah, and for Rabbi Eliezer that's problematic because he requires that it be your sukkah. Vinami Karka ain't a Nigzelet. Even if you don't hold, like Rabbi Elezer the Shitato, which is Karka is not able to be stolen, Sukkah Shu'ulahi. It's a borrowed Sukkah, because it remains in the name of the Balim, but you are there, and it without their permission, but you're there. And then it becomes a borrowed Sukkah, which is also problematic. V'Rabbanan L'Tanayhu, and Rabbanan are the Shitatam, which is, they believe Karka Eina is the Gzelet. Damri Adam Yotzei Yudei Chobato V'Sukkato Shel Chaveiro, V'Karka Eina Nigzelet. But number one, a person can use someone else's sukkah. So let's start with that, because they don't have this requirement to be sukkah shelcha, that it's your sukkah. Number two is, they believe you can't steal the land. Since karka ain't an exelet, then it becomes a sukkah shi'ulahi. It's a borrowed sukkah. But that's not a problem. A borrowed sukkah is not an issue whatsoever. Aval, on the other hand, gazal etzim v'zikech v'hem. If he stole the wood and then used that for tzchach, divrei akol ein lo elo dmei etzim. Everybody agrees here that the claimant here only has the right to get monetary compensation for the wood that was stolen.
And that wood?
And not the wood back. He can't demand that he gets the wood back. He can't demand that he gets the schach back. Mimai, how do you know that that's the case? How do you know this is where Rabbi Elezer and the Chachamim are arguing? Miktani dumya dirishut rabim. There were two cases that we brought before in the Braita. One Braita was a case of sukkah gzula. The second case was that of putting schach up in the rishut rabim. Ma rishut rabim karka lavdi dehu. In the Rishut Rabim, it's clear that the land is not his land because it belongs to the public. Sukanami lav karka didehu. Case by sukkah is also a case where it's not his land. So therefore, this case in the Braita is a case where it's not his land, and he tosses out the guy from the sukkah, and that's what the problem is. According to Rabbi Lezer, it's a problem. According to the Chachamim, it is not a problem. So here, in the case, they basically have two fundamental machlokot. One machlokot is whether you require the sukkah to be yours. Do you have to sit in your own sukkah? Or can each person sit in the sukkah of someone else? You can borrow a sukkah, you can go over to your friend's house, sit in their sukkah. That's what the Chachamim say. The Chachamim say you don't have to own the sukkah. Rabbi Elezer says you do need to own the sukkah. That's the first layer of machloket. I just remind you, there's an interesting question raised by Tosafot there, which is, if you do believe that everybody has to own a sukkah, so you go to a family that has a number of children at over the age of bar mitzvah or bat mitzvah, then each person has to have their own sukkah. So Tosafot asks the question, according to Rabbi Elezer, they require your own sukkah. What do you do in that case? So in the end, he says, maybe you could say in that case that it's considered to be bayit echad, and that we look at the household unit as being a single unit, and it's still considered to be lecha. But it does raise serious issues when you say that you have to be in your own sukkah. Like with lulav, we say, yeah, each person's got to have their own lulav, that's one thing. But to say that each person has to have their own sukkah, that's much more serious investment or consideration. But that's an aside in Rabbi Lezer's opinion. So now you have Rabbi Lezer and the Chachamim arguing about that one issue. Do you have to own the sukkah? The secondary issue which they argue about is whether karka is nigzelet or karka in a nigzelet, which will be mashpia that will affect the din. According to the Chachamim, karka in a nigzelet, karka is not able to be stolen. So therefore, when you toss the guy out of the sukkah, you end up with a sukkah shula, a borrowed sukkah. So you don't have a problem of mitzvah baba beira. You don't have a problem of gzela because you didn't steal it. So since you didn't steal it, the only thing that's the question is that you borrowed a sukkah. It's not your sukkah. Chachamim say, no problem, borrowed sukkah is fine. It doesn't have to be your sukkah. Rabbi Elazar, on the other hand, who number one thinks karka is nigzelet, so if karka is nigzelet and then you steal the sukkah, then you're not going to be, you'll say the sukkah for two reasons. One is because it's not your sukkah, going to Rabbi Elazar, and number two is it's mitzvah abba be'avira. In addition, he says, even if karka is ain't a nigzelet, it's still problematic going to Rabbi Elazar because it's a sukkah she'ula. And according to him, a sukkah she'ula doesn't help you because it has to be your sukkah. The problem we have is, okay, then where is the case of sukkah gzula according to the Chachamim? Do the Chachamim ever have a case of sukkah gzula? Because every time you talk about sukkah gzula, karka ain't a nigzelet, and there's no such thing as a sukkah gzula. Where's that case? So Rashi says, I'll tell you the case of sukkah gzula. You have to have it separated from the karka. As long as it's mechubar, the karka, it has a din like karka, and it's a karka ain't a nigzelet. So the Chachamim, that'll never be an issue because karka ain't a nigzelet. So Rashi says, the case is where you have a sukkah gabi agala. Sukkah gabe spina. Top of objects that are not attached to the ground, not mechubar the karka, but are metaltalin. Now, as soon as you make them into metaltalin, then I can physically steal this sukkah. Because the sukkah is no longer a din in karka, it's a din in metaltalin. Metaltalin, you can steal. And then you'll have a problem of sukkah gzula. Obviously, in the case where you stole the tzchach, that's the case where everybody agrees there is gzela, because then you're talking about metaltalin that can be stolen. It's not a problem because you don't have to return the etzim. You have to give monetary compensation for it, but the etzim become yours. And since they become yours, you can utilize them for the sukkah. So now, according to Rashi, the case is a case where you put a sukkah on a gala, sukkah on a sfina, and I'm able to steal it. Tosafot says, I have a better way to come up with the case. The case is where Reuven comes and builds his sukkah on Shimon's land. He doesn't build it on his own land, he builds it on Shimon's land. Shimon shows up and he throws Reuven out of the sukkah, out of his Reuven's own sukkah. Now here, the problem of karka in an exelet. What do you mean karka in an exelet? Here, it's his karka. So it's no question. Now Tosafot says the problem of karka in exelet is something that we discussed yesterday, is that karka cannot be stolen. Practically, it's just not possible to steal karka because karka doesn't move. You can't lift it up. You can't change the karka. You can't make a kinyan in that way on the karka. And therefore, karka in an exelet. So Tosafot says, fine, in a case where the land belonged to Shimon and the sukkah is sitting on the land, then I can come up with a case where karka nigzelet, because he doesn't have to steal the karka, it's his own karka. And when he throws the guy out of the sukkah, then he's stealing the sukkah, because he can affect the movement of ownership here, because it's his land. And so therefore it works. Rabbi Akiva Eiger asks on Tosafot over here, what do you mean? That's not the reason karka nigzelet. Karka nigzelet is because we have in Perakam Rube, we have klau pratu klau. The Gemara says that only things that can be stolen have to be dome to these items, and the classifications are it has to be davar mitaltel, something that is non-real property, something that's a movable item, and it also has to be that davar that has bo erech, that has value in it of itself. The Gemara there also excludes shtarot. Shtarot, you can steal a shtar, it doesn't work because it's a gzeirat hakatuv. And so it's over here, karka in exelet is gzeirat hakatuv. What is Tosafot saying over here? That, oh, karka in exelet is a practical problem. It is a practical problem, but it's also gzeirat hakatuv. So why is Tosafot invoking the principle of practical rather than simply the gzeirat hakatuv? The answer to that might lay in the fact that even if you believe there is a gzeirat hakatuv that precludes you from stealing, or there is no kinyan on the property, it might be possible for you to be a violation of Easter of Lo Tigzol, but Tosafot says is there's two issues. There's one issue is there's a gzeirat hakatuv. The other issue is that there is, in a practical sense, karka can't be stolen. So between those two, I have no lo tigzol, but I also have no kinyan. It says over here, when I have owned the land and I have a sukkah on top of it, I've gotten out of the problem, the practical problem. So you're right, it's still mechubar the karka and I'm in violation of lo tigzol. But in terms of kinyan, I cannot make a kinyan on this item, practically steal it, therefore it's a sukkah gzula. All the gzeirat hakatuv says is that I can't make a kinyan to make me responsible for the gzeila and to require me the din of hashava to return it. So that's what the gzeirat hakatuv does. But in terms of the isur gzeila, the violation of lo tigzol, if I can come up with a way to steal, even though it's karka or mechuber the karka, in that instance I will be in violation of lo tigzol. And once I'm in violation of lo tigzol, becomes a sukkah gzula. And a sukkah gzula will be what the Chachamim are molded to Rabbi Eliezer in the previous stop, that they're molded to Rabbi Eliezer by sukkah gzula, that it's problematic. That's the sukkah gzula that we're speaking about. Obviously, Rashi says no. The gzeirat hakatuv says no lo tigzol, no kinyan. There's nothing effective over here. It doesn't matter. The gzeirat hakatuv is that you have no ability to take possession of this item, and Lok Tigzol is not effective. So Rashi comes up with the movable sukkah. Tosafot comes up with the other solution, but the difference in their opinion might be how you view karka and in exelet. Is exerka too, but do we also talk about the practical issue of the inability to take the karka, and that has a secondary impact, which is when you can make the kinyan, then there's a possibility of gzula over here, and that's what Tosafot suggests. Alright, safto. So there was this woman, this older woman, Da'atai the Kameder of Nachman. She came before Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman's a Dayan. Amrale Reish Galuta v'kulu Rabbanon debe Reish Galuta b'suka gzula avayatve. The exilark and all the Rabbanon of the exilark are sitting in a stolen sukkah. Tzavka v'lashka by Rav Nachman. She keeps screaming and Nachman does not respond to her claim and he is not paying attention. He's ignoring her. He's not dealing with her claim. Amrale, she says to him, Itata Dhavile Lavua, Talat Ma'avatamne Sari Abde, a woman whose forefather had 318 servants, Tzavcha Kamaichu, is raising an issue here, Velo Ashka Chituba, and you're not going to pay attention to her? Now, the 318 references to Avram Avinu. Sefer Breshit, it says that Avram Avinu has Vayerech Echanichav, and he takes 318 men with him. So it references that I am a daughter of Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu had 318 servants to him. Why is that relevant over here? Because she feels that Rav Nachman's not responding to her because it's the Reish Galuta, it's the exilarch. Because of the exilarch's position or social status, Rav Nachman's unwilling to address her claim because it's this woman versus the Reish Galuta, or the house of the Reish Galuta. So what does she say? She says, listen, I'm just as good. I'm a Bat Avraham, who had all these servants. I'm also of status. I'm a woman of status. You have to take my claim seriously against the Reish Galuta. So then, why doesn't he take it? Amar Lahu, Rav Nachman, Pi'itahi, this woman is just making a lot of noise. She's quarrelsome, but she doesn't have a real claim. Because she's only entitled to Dmei Yitzim. She's only entitled to get back the money or the compensation for that which was stolen, but not the object itself. Now, why is that? This is what David asked before. Is because Takanat Chachamim Hizu Al Hamirish Hagazul Shiban Obibira. You steal a beam, and then you build it into your house. She told it Nigzalet Damav, that you only have to pay back the money. We don't ask him to dismantle or to take apart his building. So this is a din of what we call Takanat HaShavim. Takanat HaShavim is an institution that the Rabbanan put in place to facilitate Ganavim doing tshuva. If they take objects, they steal them, and then they build them into a building, and now you say, listen, you want to do tshuva, you got to take apart the building, give back that which you stole, then everything will be fine. The chances of somebody doing that are very low. So in order to facilitate the ability to do tshuva, they said, listen, you can keep the beam, just pay for what you stole over here. Why is this considered to be takanat meirish? Take the schach off and give it back. Right, so I think what David's asking and bothered me also is, wait, you know, when you're talking about takanat meirish, talking about you're putting it into a building, it's a structure, and you have to take it apart. Here it's the schach on the sukkah, you just take the schach off, you can give it back. What you have to say is that that's considered to be a binyan. Sukkah is already a binyan, and once you put it in there, we're not going to ask you to dismantle your sukkah or take apart your sukkah. And since we don't ask you to do that, then there's a kinyan. Midrabanan, there's a kinyan here on the object because of Takanat HaShavim. It now belongs to you. And you just have to compensate for it. So in this case, the sukkah is not a sukkah gzula because that which is on top is subject to Takanat Merish. Takanat HaShavim, it's subject to those takanot. And because of that, you don't have to return the schach. If you don't have to return the schach, it's now yours. And you don't say the mitzvah. So that's what he's saying to the woman. The woman's claim is not right. She's saying they're sitting in a stolen sukkah. Yes, the schach was stolen, but they're no longer sitting in a stolen sukkah because of Takanat HaShavim. They have to compensate this woman, but they don't have to give her back the schach. And what she's saying about the fact that they're in a stolen sukkah is incorrect in this case. And that's what we said before, that Divrei Hakol, when Gazal Yitzim Sikech Behem, everybody agrees that Ein Lo Ela Dmei Yitzim, that there is no sukkah gzula here. Why? This is because of this issue of Takanat HaShavim. Amar Ravina, Haikeshura Demitalauta Degzula Abdelei Rabbanon Takanta Mishum Takanat Meirish. So this is exactly what we just said. Ravina says the whole thing is that you have a boar that is put into the sukkah that was stolen. Then Rabbanon instituted Takanat Meirish, that of the board, which we don't ask you to dismantle something. And therefore, you are granted the special dispensation that it's yours. And that allows you to be yotzei the mitzvah sukkah. But you still have to compensate for it. As Rashi says over here, V'lo amrinan, ain't kind of said mirubav, yastir sukato. Question that we asked before, wait, there's not a big loss here. Just take apart your sukkah. We're not talking about a house. We're not talking about a building. You're just taking apart a sukkah. So my says, the mitzvah mishavi le koshiva kebinyan keva. Because there's a mitzvah of sukkah, the Torah makes it as if this is your house. This is a building for these 7 days. And so then it takes on the status of a house. Even though it's not a house, it gets the same status as a house because of the Torah saying, Teshu gein taduru, this is your house for this period of time. And that's why we invoke Takanat Meirish, we invoke Takanat Shavim. So Gemara says, Pshito, Maishna Me'itzim. Why is this any different than the Eitzim? He's talking about a board, Kishura, whereas before we said the same thing about Eitzim, that he was Sikech Bahem. So what is Ravina adding over here by putting in the board versus the Eitzim? I would have thought that schach is easy to find in the shuk. You can find wood or pieces of schach anytime you want. It's a common item and easy to purchase. Of a high, low shchicha. But over here with the board, when we're talking about a merish, that's a more processed item. And in their day, it was not easy to get boards or 2x4s. That it took a significant amount of work. Same alo. So then maybe there I would say we do not invoke Takanat Shavim, Kamash Malan, that we do say that. What you have here is a possibility that Takanat Shavim would only apply to things that you could easily find in the market. So if you give the money guy money, he can go into the shuk and buy whatever it is that you stole from him. On the other hand, by the board, which is not easy to replace, then maybe we won't invoke Takanat Shavim because he's going to get the money. And now for him to get that same board again is not so easy. So maybe there we would not invoke it, at least by Sukkah. By Binyan, we're going to invoke it either way because it's just too much to take it apart. But by Sukkah, what's not as big a deal to take it apart, maybe we should differentiate in the difficulty you're causing the person that you stole from. And the Gemara says in the end, we do not differentiate. And that, in both cases, you're granted the Takanat Shavim, and it remains yours, and you can just pay off the money. And that's the Kamash Malan. That's where Ravina adds for us. Ravina adds on top of what we saw before, that when you use Eitzim, it's not problematic in terms of Sukkah, but you have to compensate. So too, by a board, it's good for the sukkah, you just have to compensate for it because of Takanat Shavim. We apply it in both of these instances. Now the Gemara says, Hani mile bigo shiva. That's only within the 7 days of Sukkot. Of all the barta shiva hadar beine. But after Sukkot, you have to give it back. The whole reason for Takanat Shavim here is because the sukkah is considered like your bayit during the 7 days of Sukkot. It's like Binyan Keva, as Rashi says. But that's only as long as it's Sukkot. Once Sukkot passes, then we say no, that you have to give back the board because there's no longer an issue of binyan keva or a binyan here. And it's not a big deal to take apart the sukkah. Because at that point, he's not dismantling the sukkah. V'chabro b'tina, if he sealed it in with plaster or with cement, then even after the 7 days, you only have to give him back money. This is the balance that Rashi is trying to strike here, which is that Takanat Shavim applies when it's a big deal or a pretty big loss for you to return it. If you invested a lot of energy or money into utilizing the stolen object, then we invoke Takanat Shavim. So then Rashi says, okay, so that's fine by Sukkah. And we said, oh, even by a Kishura, even by a board, we're going to allow you to keep it because by the Sukkah, it's a Binyan Keva, it's your house for those 7 days. To dismantle it will be a big deal for you because you have to have a place to live during those 7 days. So during those 7 days, we're going to say, don't take it apart, just pay or compensate for it. On the other hand, after the 7 days are up, when you're not going to be living in the Sukkah, to ask you to dismantle it is not a big deal because you probably dismantle it anyway. And on top of that, there's not a lot of money to take it apart. It's a temporary dwelling anyway. So then we say, go ahead and take it apart. Unless you've actually made it more permanent, which is that you've sealed it in, you plastered it, you cemented it in, then it's a significant undertaking to undo it. You invested money, you invested effort into it, then it has the regular dinim of Takanat Shavim. We're not going to ask you to take it apart. Rashi says, well, that's why, by the case of Sukkah Gzula, what did Rashi say the example of Sukkah Gzula was? When it's on the back of a wagon, or it's on a boat. What about Takanat Shavim? Why don't we just say Takanat Shavim, and you don't have to return the Sukkah that you stole? We see over here, if you stole the Eitzim, you stole the boards, you don't have to give them back. There's Takanat Shavim. So Rashi says that's not the case over there because there you invested no energy or effort in it. When you go and steal the agala with the sukkah on it, you didn't invest anything in putting the sukkah together. So if they tell you to give the sukkah back, I mean, you invested in stealing the agala, but you didn't invest in the building of the sukkah. Over there, Takanat Shavim will not apply. That's what Rashi says because you didn't invest in it. You didn't invest energy, money into the sukkah. So Takanat Shavim is really a takana where someone's already put themselves into the object physically, monetarily, and it would prevent him from doing tshuva if we ask him to take it apart. But in a case where he never invested anything in the building, say, just give it back, over there we're not going to invoke takanat shavim. So that's true according to Rashi, that's true according to when you have it on the back of a spina, when you have it on the back of an agala. It's also true here in the Gemara where it's after Sukkot. After Sukkot, it's no big deal to take it apart because that's probably what you're going to do with your sukkah anyway, and you're not living in the sukkah anymore. So for there, you're going to say, give it back, unless you invested a lot in it. How'd you invest? You plastered it, you cemented it, you made it a more permanent structure. Over there, we're not going to ask you to give it back. That's where takanat shavim comes in to protect you. Now, again, the takanat shavim we see here is invoked even when it causes some difficulty to the nigzal, which is in the case where it's made seem, we said for sure, you can pay him back because you can easily replace it. But even by the case of the board, where it's not as easy to replace it, we still invoke takanat shavim, despite the difficulty, a little bit of difficulty on the nigzal, in order to facilitate the person who stole doing tshuva. In the end, it'll be to the benefit of the nigzal. Because if he does tshuva and he wants to give money back, in the end, Nigzal got something back. If he's unwilling to do that, then he won't get his board back and he won't get his money back. So in the end, it is to the benefit of the Nigzal, even though it's a little bit of an inconvenience to the Nigzal. Right now, the Gemara says, Tana, Yavesh Pasul, Rabbi Yehuda Makshir. We just have a braita that says, when it's dried out, it's Pasul, and Rabbi Yehuda says it's fine. What we're talking about, obviously, is the question here. So, Amarova, Machloket, Bilhudav. This is machloket is only by lulav. The rabbanan savrei makshin and lulav le'etrog. The rabbanan believe that there's a hekesh. There is an adjacency in the pasuk between the kapot marim and the pre-eitz hadar. Ma'etrog ba'i hadar. Just like we know that etrog requires hadar, af lulav ba'i hadar. Also, the lulav requires hadar. Rabbi Yehuda savar. Rabbi Yehuda says lo makshin and lulav le'etrog. Lulav is standalone. Etrog is standalone. The lulav does not have a requirement of hadar, and therefore it can be yavish. Aval be'etrog divrei kol hadar be'inan. Everybody agrees by etrog that you require hadar because pre-eitz hadar. The description of the etrog is pre-eitz hadar. Now the way they're interpreting it is pre-eitz is the description of the item that you get from Torah Shabbat Peh. Hadar is a beautiful one, something that is beautified, that is mihudar. And that's the way we translate hadar. We're going to see later on in the Gemara that there are alternatives in how to darshan the word hadar. It could be hadar ilana, mishana lashana. It could be idur, the lashon yivani, which means water. That tells you it's an item that grows on all water. There are different interpretations of the word hadar that might affect things here. It's clear what we're saying here is that the hadar that is being used here is a hadar that means beautiful. Hadar that means it has to be of a certain type, fresh and good-looking, not dried out. So everybody agrees with regards to that troll that that's the case because it says pre-eitz hadar. The question is, the pasuk begins, v'kach lechem v'yom rishon, yom pre-eitz hadar, kambot tamarim. So does that pre-eitz hadar, does that hadar also modify the kapot tamarim because of the juxtaposition of the two or not? Chamim say yes, so therefore lulav yavesh is problematic. According to Rabbi Yehuda, lulav yavesh is not problematic because he does not have that juxtaposition, or that drusha of that juxtaposition. It happens to be a machloket Rashi and Tosafot, what the machloket is. Rashi claims that when it comes to the shlosh esrei midot, she'at Torah nidreshet behem, that all of those have to come be misora, except for a kal v'chomer, which is open to a logical argument, that a person can be dan me'atzmo, but besides that, everything has to be misora, and therefore the fi Rashi, their machloket here is, whether they have a misora for the hekesh between lulav and etrog. On the other hand, Tosafot believes just the opposite. He says, all of the shlosh esrei midot, the person can be dan mi'atzmo, chutz migzera shava, except for a gzera shava, which he has to have a misora for. There happens to be that those two items the Gemara mentions, that first of all, ein adam dan gzera shava mi'atzmo, and that the Gemara does mention that a person is dan a kal v'chomer mi'atzmo. So those are the two that the Gemara mentions. The question is, what's with the remainder of them? Rashi says the remainder of them is the same as gzera shava, you need a misora for. And Tosafot says, no, the remainder are like kal v'chomer, that they all can be brought in a logical way. So therefore, only gzera shava is excluded. Based on that, Tosafot says here, the machloket between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda has to be a logical one. And he suggests, maybe it is, because shema kasavar lo shach l'shon hadar lo beperot, that maybe hadar is only a modifier by fruits, it's not a modifier by leaves, branches. And that might be the logical argument over here, whether hadar can be applied to lulav or not. Mar says, "Lulav lo by Rabbi Yehuda hadar." Is that really true? That Rabbi Yehuda does not require hadar by lulav atanan. Rabbi Yehuda omer ye'agdenu milamalo. In our Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda said that if nifridu alav, if the leaves on the spine opened up, then we said it's kasher. But Rabbi Yehuda says you should just tie it back at the top. You should bind it back towards the spine. My taima, why does he want you to bind it back to the spine? La mishum dibay adar, because that's where it looks nicer. That's the hidur. And so he requires you to bind it. Umar says, no, kediktani taima. No, we have the reason. Rabbi Yehuda omer mishum Rabbi Tarfon kapot marim kapot. Kapot marim is kfot, which means to tie up, to bind. We have the word kfot, which is used in different places, which means to bind the individual, bind the hands of the individual. So therefore, imaya parud yikaftenu. If they separated, you bind them back together, because that's the definition of kapot tamarim. Kapot tamarim is a bound lulav. A bound lulav means one that is tight, where the leaves have yet to open up. Where it says, okay, velo bayadar. Let's look at another instance. Yehuda really doesn't require adar, vatanan. Enok dimet lulav el bimino. You're only allowed to bind the lulav with something that is one of the minim of the lulav. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Why is it that Rabbi Yehuda says that you can only bind it with one of the minim that are there? La mishum dubai adar, because that's why it looks good. If you bind it with something that's an external item, then it doesn't look as pretty. Here, if you bind it with one of the minim, that makes it look pretty, that makes it look nice. That's an issue of adar. But it says, lo, dahamarova afilu b'siv, afilu b'ikra d'dikla. And when we say that you can bind it with something that's so min, you can even use the sieve, which is the bast of the palm tree, or afilu b'ikra d'dikla, which is like the bark of the dekel. You can use these items that peel off from the palm tree. These are not lulav, but these are parts of the palm tree. They're certainly not hadar. They're not anything beautiful. They're the bark or little pieces of the palm tree. So we're definitely talking about hadar, and yet Rava says that these are good for use as a binder for the lulav. So then what's the reason? My time, the Rabbi Yehuda, Hatam. What is the reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda over there? The kasavar lulav tzarich eged. Because he says lulav requires an eged. Vi maita mina achrino. And if you put in another min, havalohu chamisha minim. Now you're going to have five minim. So the problem here is not a problem of hadar being beautiful. The problem is that he requires you to ma'aged the lulav. Now when you're ma'aged the lulav, if you use something that it's own min, then you still only have four minim that are there. That's fine. If you start to already use a fifth min for the binding, then you have a problem, because if the eged is a different min, then you are mosif or bal tosif by adding in a fifth min. If you bind them together and there's another min there, then you have a fifth min in your bundle, because the pieces of the binding is different, and that's going to cause you a problem. If you don't believe lulav tzarich eged, then the eged itself is not meaningful in terms of defining the category, the unit over here. But since you here believe lulav tzarich eged, then the eged becomes essential. Rashi says here, kukah kol negadimo avi mina mitzvah. Anything that's bound together with it is part of the mitzvah. Nimso ver bal tosifim yeged min chamishi. If you use that fifth min, now you have a problem, because the mitzvah includes the eged. Now you put another min in for the eged. You have five minim instead of four minim. So now the Gemara says, Uba etrog mi bai Rabbi Yehuda hadar. Okay, so does Rabbi Yehuda really require hadar by etrog? We said divrei akol requires hadar by etrog. Vatanya, arba'at minim shubulav, kishem, she'en pochatim em, kachem mosifim alem. Right, it says, just like the arba minim of the love, you can't add on to them. You also can't subtract from them. You can't have less. Lo matza etrog. If he doesn't find an etrog, lo yavi, lo parish, velo rimon, should not bring a quince or a pomegranate. Velo davar acher, not anything else. Kimushim, if they are shriveled up, ksherim, then they're fine. Yiveshim, if they're dried out, then they're psulim. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, afyu veshim, even dried out is fine. So now, if Rabbi Yehuda believes that by the etrog you need hadar, then why is he allowing to use the dried out etrog? Everybody agrees that dried out, yavesh, is a problem in hadar. So here we see Rabbi Yehuda saying by etrog that yavesh is just fine. If yavesh is just fine, that means he doesn't make a demand of hadar. Rami Yehuda, maise bibnei krachim, shayu morishim et ludavim libnei bnehem. There's an instance in the people of the city that they used to give as an inheritance from father to child, they passed on the lulavim. So here you see that yavesh is not a problem, because certainly after one or two generations, this lulav is not going to look like it was fresh off the tree. Of course, yavesh is fine. So Amru, though, they responded, Misham Raya, you can't prove anything. In Shatatchak Raya. There's no proof from Shatatchak. The reason they were doing this was because either there was a gzera against the mitzvot, so they hid the lulav, or there was a problem in some location of getting lulavim, so they passed them along, because that's the only lulav that they had. So we discussed the other day, in terms of lulav yavesh, that we use greater discretion in what's considered to be yavesh in situations where they can't actually obtain a lulav, and that we have more flexibility there. So similar type of idea over here. But they're saying to them, that's not a proof, because that's not the chatchila, that's not what they were supposed to be doing. They did it because there was no other choice in this situation. So now Gemara says, "Ktani mihat, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af yivishim ksherim." So Rabbi Yehuda still says that something that's dried out is kasher. My love, I etrog. Isn't what we were talking about in that brayta an etrog? And he says it's fine if it's dried out. He says, lo, alulav. I was going to lulav. So the end piece of that brayta is talking about the lulav. Even though in the beginning we were discussing an etrog, but minim shubulav, shem shem pochatim em em osivilem, lo matzah etrog. If he doesn't have an etrog, don't replace it with these other replacements. Then, when we said, mushim kasherim yiveshim psulim, we thought that was referencing the earlier part of the brayta and talking about an etrog. And we said, well, then Rabbi Yehuda doesn't think that a etrog yavesh is problematic. The answer Gemara is no. That latter half of the brayta is talking about a lulav. And we know that Rabbi Yehuda says by lulav that yavesh is okay, because he doesn't have the connection, the hekesh, to etrog for lulav. So that's how Gemara answers the problem here and says that Rabbi Yehuda does think that etrog yavesh is problematic, but lulav yavesh is not problematic. Amamar, Hashem Shein Pochatim Mehem Kachin Mosefim Aleim. Just like you can't have less than four minim, so too you can't have more than four minim. I said, Shita. That's, of course. What's the question here? The Torah says, have four minim. So, Madutem Ova Amar Rabbi Yehuda Lulav Tzarech Eged. Because Rabbi Yehuda says the Lulav requires a binding. Vi Maiti Mini Achrina Ailuchudei Kaiv Ailuchudei Kaiv. If I bring another min, each one stands independently. Kamash Malon, that we don't say that Ailuchudei Kaiv. We don't say this idea that each one stands independently. You could have argued that there's a requirement to bring four minim, and you happen to bring a fifth min. So you have four minim, plus one. The plus one is separate, meaning that the plus one has nothing to do with the mitzvah. You're doing the mitzvah, and you have to have something else that's there at the same time. You could have argued that. But Gemara says, no, we say that even though you're taking the min outside of the eged, so first of all, according to Rabbi Yehuda, say you bind the four, the three minim together plus the etrog, and then you have another min outside of the eged. So maybe I would have thought of their error. There's no problem of Baal Tosif. No problem with Baal Tosif because you're outside of the binding that Rabbi Yehuda requires. And there would have been Hailu Chudekai, Hailu Chudekai. The answer is no. We still see that as a problem of Baal Tosif, and that's the Kamash Malon of that Braita. That even if you add on a mean outside of the Eged, it is a problem. Tosafot, based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which says that there's only Baal Tosif, according to the one Manda Amar that says, Lulav Tzarech Eged. And only if you're ma'aged them together, is there a din of Baal Tosif. But according to the one who says that there's no din of Eged, then you say, Hailuchu Dekai, Hailuchu Dekai. How do I reconcile that Gemara in Sanhedrin with the Gemara over here? I'm telling you, the case over here is a case where it has to be outside of the Eged. If it's inside the Eged, it's of course Baal Tosif, and you can't say, Hailuchu Dekai, Hailuchu Dekai. So it has to be the case that we're talking about here with Rabbi Yehuda, is a case where you have the other men outside of the Eged. So why don't I invoke the same principle that we do in Sanhedrin and say, Hailuchu Dekai, Hailuchu Dekai? Why does the Gemara not think that in this case? So Tosafot comes up with an innovative solution over here, and he says, depends how you take it. If it's derech gleilatan or not, do you take it the way that they're growing? So if they're inside the eged or the eged itself, then it doesn't matter that you took it derech gleilatan. It doesn't matter that you took it in the way that they grow, because it's inside the eged. You're making it part of the mitzvah, and there's a problem about Tosif. But when it's outside of the eged, or if there's no requirement of eged, if you simply take another min, we're not going to worry about it. Now, if you do take the min, derech deleilatan, then there will be a problem. It'll be a problem according to Rabbi Yehuda, and it will also be a problem according to the Chachamim. But then, what do I do with the Gemara in Sanhedrin that says, when I take all the minim, if I don't require an eged, then there is no problem about Tosif? Tosafot says, no, that's not what it says in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says, kol ha-mosif goreya. Whenever you add it on, you've detracted. So the din of kol mosif goreya, that when you add on an additional min, it actually ruins the situation and you're mafkia the mitzvah, you lose out on the mitzvah, that's only true when it's inside the eged, and that will only be according to Rabbi Yehuda, who said tzarech eged. On the other hand, according to Rabbi Yehuda, when you have a min on the outside, that is derech deleto, or the chachamim, who don't require an eged if you have an extra min there, you will be in violation of Baal Tosif. You just will not have the din of kol mosif goreya. That means that you will be in violation of Baal Tosif, but you will also accomplish the mitzvah of Arba Minim. You will have the mitzvah of Arba Minim, because we say Hailuchu Dekai, not Bigoreya, because Hailuchu Dekai, Hailuchu Dekai. On the other hand, you'll still be in violation of Baal Tosif, because you took it as a single entity to be Derech Deilatan. And that's how Tosafot explains the Gemara over here. In Sanhedrin and other places, Tosafot takes up the Girsa of the Rach over here. And the Girsa of the Rach, Arbat Minim Shebulolav Kishem Shem Pochatin Mehen, Kachen Mosivim Alehen. Pshita, of course. Ma de teima hovam rululav ben agud, ben sheinu agud kasher. Didn't you tell me before, according to the Chachamim, it doesn't matter if it has an eged or it doesn't have an eged? Hilgach lo tzarich eged. So it doesn't require an eged. So then why is there a problem of bal tosif? Hayiterta de mosif al ilan harbalu chudei kai? Velo mifsil be kamash velo on de posil. You would think that it wouldn't be posil because halu chudei kai, halu chudei kai. This is a question on the Chachamim, not a question on Rabbi Yehuda. And then the kamash velo on de posil. Kamash velo that it is pasul. And that would support the Mustafa's understanding here that this is not just in the position of Rabbi Yehuda, but it's also in the position of the Chachamim. And that is that even though you may not have the din of homosif goreya, nevertheless, you still will have a problem of bal tosif. Alright, now Gemara says, Amar Mar, lo matzai etrog, if he doesn't find any etrog, lo yavi, lo rimon, velo parish, velo davar chay, shim bring up replacement, pshita. I mean, what's the question here? It says bring an etrog, and that's the din in the Torah, why would you think that bring a pomegranate does anything for you? So, mother tema like to gei chashalot tishkak torat etrog. Say, okay, you know, bring it just so they don't forget that there was a mitzvah etrog. They couldn't get etrogim that year. So they should take some fruit to remind them that they do take something there, and they have a placeholder for the upcoming years. Kamash Malan, Zimne Denofik Chuva Mine, Ta'ata the Misrach. That's a big risk, because if you use a pomegranate 1 year as a placeholder, people might think the subsequent year, not only can you use an etrog, you can also use a pomegranate. So that's too risky. The same problem with a lemon. You don't give a lemon to a child, it might lead to the wrong concept in the end that lemons are okay to use for a etrog. The answer is that you need an etrog, even if it's a pasul etrog, it's better than nothing. If you use a pasul etrog, at least you're using etrog, and from that you can just use it as a placeholder. But to use other fruits is no good. Alright, tashma. Etrog yashan, an old etrog, pasul. Rabbi Yehuda Makshir, Rabbi Yehuda says it's fine. Tiyufta, derava, tiyufta. Now we're in trouble. Because until now we explained Rabbi Yehuda and said, alright, we can get out of the problem of Rabbi Yehuda saying that etrog is not a problem of Adar. We'll say we're talking about lulav. We wiggled our way out of all these cases where it seems that Rabbi Yehuda thinks that etrog does not need Adar. In the end, here we have a bright that is explicit, which says that we're talking about an etrog that is aged. That means we're talking about an etrog that is now dried out. The Chamim say it's problematic, and Rabbi Yehuda says it's fine. So it's clear here that Rabbi Yehuda does not think that there's a problem of Adar by etrog. If we go back to the original statement, that was Rava's statement. Rava's statement is the machloki between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim is only with regards to lulav. But by etrog, everybody agrees that it requires hadar. So the Gemara first challenged the position of Rabbi Yehuda that lulav does not require hadar. But a number of examples where it seems like Rabbi Yehuda requires that lulav have a hadar, each case the Gemara knocked out and said, no, it's for a different reason. Eged is a problem because of bal tosif. The problem of nifridu alav is because of kapot tamarim, not because of adar. So the Gemara wiggled its way out. Then the Gemara switched over and says, it's really true that Rabbi Yehuda thinks you need hadar by etrog. Here I have a braita that says that if it's yavesh, it's fine according to Rabbi Yehuda. Gemara said, no, that's not a problem. It's not talking about etrog, that's talking about lulav. So we kept trying to get out of it, but now we're stuck with a braita that explicitly says that an etrog that is aged and is yavesh, Rabbi Yehuda says, is fine. And so that undermines Rava's position that we had before, because you can no longer say that divrei akol by prietz adar, by an etrog, is it requires adar. Gemara says, velo by adar. Is that really true? There are Rabbi Yehuda thinks you don't require adar. Banantanan, we have a Mishnah later on. Hayirok kikarti, a etrog that is green, like karti. Rabbi Meir makshir, Rabbi Meir says it's fine, Rabbi Yehuda posel. Lam dishum debay adar. Isn't it because Rabbi Yehuda requires adar and green is not hadar? Lo mishum delo gamar peire. That's an unripened etrog. It's green because it hasn't matured fully to the point where it's going to be yellow. But when we get to the Mishnah, we'll discuss this about Yeroke Karti. Yeroke Karti says that a green etrog is no good. Yet if you go out to buy an etrog today, you go out and you see plenty of green etrogim that people are selling. How is it possible they're selling green etrogim when it's explicit in the Mishnah that Yeroke Karti is pasul? Tashma, shiur etrog katan, Rabbi Meir Omer ke'egos. The minimum shiur of a etrog, according to Rabbi Meir, is the size of a nut. Rabbi Yehuda Omer kibetza, the size of an egg. La mishum debay adar. He needs the bigger size because it has to be nice and pretty. Lo mishum delo gamar peri. If you get something the size of a nut, that means that it hasn't ripened. It's not a fully ripened etrog. On the other hand, if you get it at the size of a betza, there's a possibility that the etrog is already ripe now, and then you can use it. Okay, tashma, ubagadol, kadesh yachosh shnaim biyado achat. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, maximum size of an etrog. Rabbi Yehuda says that you have to be able to hold two etrogim in one hand. That's the largest size that it can be. Rabbi Yossi Meir, afilu achad b'shtei yadav. It can be as big that it takes two hands to hold it up. You have an etrog that's so big that you have to lift it up with two hands, that's still considered to be a kosher etrog. My time, huh? La bishum dibay adar. Again, why is the reason that Rabbi Yehuda says that it should be the size where you can fit two into your hand? Must be because that's a nice size etrog, and that's hadar. So the Gemara says, no. Kevin damar rov lulav biyamin v'etrog bismol. When you pick up the minim, you have to pick up the lulav in your right hand and the etrog in your left hand. You pick up lulav in your right hand because it has three of the minim together with it. It's the lulav at the simen aravota together. So if we take the one that has more items together, then we're going to put it in the right hand, which is more significant. So because of that, you pick up the lulav in the right hand, then you pick up the etrog, which is a single min in your left hand. Obviously, that has implications for lefties. It's a machloket poskim. The Ramah says exactly what we're saying over here, which is the Ramah says that for a lefty, he picks it up in his left hand. It's all about chashivut. And therefore, if chashivut is which hand you pick it up, then the lefty, his left hand is the more chashuv, because that's his, if it's his right hand. And therefore, he should pick up the three minim in his left hand, and the etrog in his right hand. The Shulchan Aruch does not pass in that way. The Shulchan Aruch says that even a lefty should pick it up kol ha'olam kulo, like everybody else. And that might have to do with here, the question of left and right is not all about your strength. It discusses in the past. And when it comes to lefties, the halacha changes sometimes and sometimes it doesn't change. It changes when the item relates to you directly. When it's you having to do an action, then a lefty will do with his left hand what a righty does with his right hand. So for instance, tefillin. If you have to wrap tefillin with one hand, or you have to put your tefillin on your weaker arm, and then for a lefty, that's going to be the opposite of a righty. On the other hand, if, for instance, we have to go around the Mizbeach, and we always turn to the right when you go around the Mizbeach, why do you turn to the right when you go around the Mizbeach? Because right is considered to be bigger, because everybody's a righty, and therefore we go to the right. But what happens if you're a lefty? Does that mean you go to the left? The answer is no, because Rov Olam are righties, and that makes the determination that we're going to the right in these situations. That means even a lefty is going to go to the right in these situations. So too, over here, you could argue, and that's what the Shulchan Aruch seems to be saying, is that by lulav and etrog, the determination is not personally about how you pick up the lulav and etrog. It's about chashivut vis-a-vis the world. What's more chashuv in the world? It's the right side is the lulav and the left side is etrog. And therefore, even when the lefty picks him up, he's going to pick him up in that manner, where he keeps it in his right hand, and the etrog will be in his left hand. So, depending if you're a Sephardi or an Ashkenazi, will depend whether a lefty has to switch around the lulav to his left hand, or he keeps the lulav in his right hand. But here, the Gemara says, that's the reason that Rabbi Yehuda says that you need an etrog the size that can fit two into your hand. Because sometimes, zimnin, to mechalfile, sometimes he swaps it around, he picks it up in the wrong hand, he picks up the lulav in his left and the etrog in his right hand, and he has to switch hands. Well, if you have an etrog in one hand, and you have a lulav in the other hand, how do you switch hands? If the etrog is so big that you can't fit anything else in your hand, it's going to be very hard to switch them, and there's a possibility that the etrog will fall when you switch them back. That'll cause a psul in the etrog. So what do? Rabbi Yehuda says, you have an etrog that fit two of them into your hand. So over here, he's not going to put the etrog in his hand, but put the lulav into his hand. He has enough room in his hand to fit the etrog and the lulav together. So when he puts them together, then he can pass one to the other hand. He'll have both of them in a single hand, and then he'll switch them around. He'll switch them around without endangering the etrog, because he has enough room in his hand to pick up the etrog and the lulav together. And that's why he requires a size of etrog at maximum that allows you for two etrogim in your hand. Not because it's the nice size and it's hadar, but because it's a practical problem of switching. When you have to switch hands with these objects, we need enough room in your hand to hold both the lulav and the etrog. So how do I say that? I say that your hand has to be able to fit two etrogim in it. All right, so now the Gemara says, Ella Rabbi Yehuda aktiv hadar. In the end, it does say pre-eitz hadar. What is Rabbi Yehuda going to do with the pre-eitz hadar? How hadar bi ilano mishana lishana. He's going to darshan on this, that it's the one that stays on the ilan mishana lishana. So that's going to teach you something about which fruit we're talking about in pre-eitz hadar. Rather than it being pre-eitz and then hadar modifying it, it's going to be the noun phrases pre-eitz hadar. That is the description of the etrog because it's a pre that lives on the tree from year to year. Shelesh shira v'shel irani dachat. These are items of avodah zarah. V'shelesh shira pasul. Why is shira a problem? Amaravo lulav shel avodah zarah lo ito. If you have lulav in Missouri, you shouldn't take. V'im natal kasher. But if you do take it, it's fine. Mar says, acha ba'ashira de Moshe askinan. Here we're talking about the asher of Moshe that requires that it be burnt. Ketute michtat shureit. As if it doesn't exist. Since it has a requirement to be burnt, as if it doesn't exist. and says it doesn't exist, you don't have the minimum shiur of the lulav that you need here. Dekanami, you can prove this from a deal kind of permission, diktani dumya de irani dachat. It puts lulav of asherah together with irani dachat. What happens to the possessions of an irani dachat? This is a city that has gone off the derech and now worshipped the Avodah Zarah as an entirety, and now they're going to be put to death and all their possessions are going to be burnt. So too, over here, when we're talking about Luv HaShira, we're talking about Luv HaShira that's going to be burnt. Now, that raises issues about what exactly was going on in the Gemara, but Lulav Shel HaShira. Right, says, if it's a Lulav of Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's based on the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, that if something was an HaShira when they entered into the land of Eretz Yisrael, there's no way to be mivatel it, you have to burn it, you have to rid yourself of that type of HaShira. Later on in time, if you have an Ashira, the Ashira is only an Ashira while it's being worshipped. If somehow the Oved Kochavim decides that he doesn't want to worship this anymore, and he's batel the Avodah Zarah, he's successful at doing that, and it's no longer Avodah Zarah. So that's what the Gemara thought over here, that Lulav Shel Avodah Zarah would have been fine. Lulav Shel Avodah Zarah could be fine because it could be Nit Batel. But since it could be Nit Batel, no problem Lulav Shel Avodah Zarah. The Gemara says, no, our Mishnah is talking about a Lulav Shel Moshe, which has no bitul. Since it has no mitol, it's definitely going to be burnt, and that's why it's ketutei mechta shira. So Tosafot over here says that it's a ashira of avodah zarah. It's not takrovet avodah zarah, but an ashira of avodah zarah. And the question is, was the goy mevatel it or not mevatel the avodah zarah? So by the case of avodah zarah by Rava, he says if the goy is mevatel it, then it's fine, and you can use it for a lulav. By the avodah zarah, the ashira of Moshe, there's no bitul. Since there's no bitul, therefore, you can't use it because it always has to be burnt and there's no option over here. Now, Rashi says, what's the lulav avodah zarah over here? What's that case that Rav is talking about? He says that shimshu bol avodah zarah. It's not it itself being avodah zarah, but rather it's something in service of the avodah zarah that is what we're speaking about here. So he used it to be mechabed in front of it. Or the avodah, that avodah zarah, is done with a lulav. They threw it in front of it. So Rashi's claims that it's Mishamshe Avodah Zarah. Mishamshim are not required to be burnt. The Gemara says you can burn Mishamshe Avodah Zarah, but you could also bury them. You don't have to burn them necessarily. You don't have to burn them, you could bury them. And number two is that you could be Mevatel them. Just like you can be Mevatel a Avodah Zarah, you should be able to Mevatel the Shamashim. Rashi explains that Rava's statement refers to Mishamshe Avodah Zarah, things that you used to sweep up, plus Tikrovet Avodah Zarah is when you throw the object, you worship the Avodah Zarah with that object. The problem with Rashi saying that it's Mishamshe Avodah Zarah is, Rashi says over here that if you throw the lulav in front of the Avodah Zarah, that it's problematic. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah says, the only time Tikrovet Avodah Zarah is problematic is if this is one of the four Avodot that's done in the Mikdash. It's one of the ways that you worship the Avodah Zarah in the Mikdash. Over here, you're not doing that. So that's, Rashi over here is giving an example that seems to be very problematic. The problem with that is that Tikrovet Avodah Zarah, the Gemara explicitly says, number one is burnt, and number two is that it cannot be Nitbatel. So if that's the case, then what's Rashi speaking about over here? Now one question might actually answer the other question, which is, the Tikrovet over here is not real Tikrovet Avodah Zarah, because he did it in a way, as we said before, that wasn't the worship that's done in the Mikdash, and therefore it doesn't take on the full form of Tikrovet Avodah Zarah, but rather it becomes like Mishamshe Avodah Zarah. Now with Mishamshe Avodah Zarah, now we understand why Rashi is indicating this, because we have to come up with the reason that Rava says that Mishamshe Avodah Zarah are okay. Problem is, now how do we explain Rashi? Why are Mishamshe Avodah Zarah doing anything for you that's better than the Avodah Zarah itself? Once it comes into the hands of the Jew, it's no longer able to be Nitbatel. So we have to invoke a principle that the Rishonim mention in Avodah Zarah, which is that when it comes to being mevatel, the Avodah Zarah itself, once it's in the possession of the Jew, you can't do anything about it. So the Goy has to be mevatel it before it comes into the possession of the Jew. On the other hand, with regards to the Mishamshe Avodah Zarah, once the Goy is mevatel the Avodah Zarah, automatically the Mishamshe Avodah Zarah fall away, because without the Avodah Zarah itself, the Mishamshim have no value. And that's what Rashi might be referring to, that these Mishamshim, even after the Jew has them, they could be Nitbatel, because the Goy is Mevatel the Avodah Zarah, and therefore he can use them B'diavad. The Chatchila shouldn't do that, but B'diavad he could utilize them for the mitzvah of Lulav. So Rashi says it's talking about the Grovet Avodah Zarah, Tosfot says it's talking about Avodah Zarah itself. Problem with Tosfot's explanation is that once the Jew takes it, the Goy is no longer able to be Mevatel it. Once the Jew picks it up, he makes a kinyan on it, and it remains avodah zarah. There's no bittul of a Jew's avodah zarah. So once the Jew takes possession of it, then there's no bittul. So it has to be that there was bittul before the Jew took it. If there's bittul before the Jew took it, then there's no avodah zarah to speak of. It was already removed from it. So that's the problem with Tosafot's explanation and what must have driven Rashi to say that we're talking about mishamshei avodah zarah and not avodah zarah itself. Now Tosafot solves the problem of, wait a minute, doesn't the avodah zarah now come into the hand of a Jew and therefore it's problematic? So Tosafot says, any place the Gemara says that the avodah zarah is a sur and you can't utilize it, that's talking about avodah zarah di Israel. Anything time we're talking about avodah zarah that you're allowed to use, like the case of Rav over here, there we're talking about avodah zarah of an achri. But once the Jew takes it, doesn't become the Jew's avodah zarah. So Tosafot gives the solution, he picked it out without having kavanah, the intent for making a kinyan in it. He just picks it up, but doesn't want to make a kinyan in it, so it remains the possession of the nachri, and therefore he gave him vatel, the avodah zarah. The Rabbeinu Tam says that all the cases are talking about avodah zarah of a nachri. In certain instances, it's a case where the nachri was mevatel it. When he's mevatel it, then you can utilize it. In cases where he's not mevatel it, then you can't utilize it. And that's the bottom line here, that any case the Gemara says you can utilize avodah zarah like by Rava, that's a case where the nachri was already mevatel beforehand. Case where you can use it, that's a case where the nachri was not mevatel it. But then we have to answer two questions according to Rabbeinu Tam. Number one is, if it was already mevatel yidei nachri, why does Rava say you can't use it l'chatchila? So he answers, because l'chatchila lo yitol v'lo yitka demayis l'inyan mitzvah l'fi sheya alav shem avodah zarah. It had a shem avodah zarah. It's not the nicest way, the best way to perform the mitzvah. And therefore, the chatchila, we will say, don't do it. The other thing he has to answer is, why didn't the Gemara here say the case where you have to burn it, or it's ketude mechtat shurei, is the case where the nachri was not mevatel the avodah zarah? The answer is, because if you cut the lulav, once you sever the lulav from the tree, it's no longer avodah zarah. That's the best bitul of the avodah zarah, that he lets you walk off with the lulav. So that's clearly bitul. So why does the Gemara say you have to burn it over here? It's because this is Asherah de Moshe that's not subject to the normal laws of avodah zarah, that it's batel, because it can never be batel. And so because of that, it has to be burnt. And that's the way the Rabbeinu Tam explains our Gemara. All right, niktam rosho, if the top of the lulav is nicked, amar avuna lo shano la niktam, that's only true if it was nipped, or taken off at the top, of a nisdak, if it was cracked, kasher. Where it says, v'nisdak kasher, is that really true that a split in the lulav is okay? V'atanyu, lulav kafuf, you have a bent over lulav, kavats, or there are thorns sticking out of the lulav. On the other hand, the Ramban explains that kavats means the lulav itself is pointy or thorny because parts of it have hardened at the tips to make it into a very sharp object. Tosafot quotes the Aruch, who says that it's a lashon of tzmita, like tzomet hagidim, which means something that's very tight, bound, or possibly shriveled. And that's the interpretation of the Ritva, which is kavats with a chaf, which means kmatim kmatim, it's bumpy or layered, like something that is shriveled up. The Or Zerua suggests that nitkavets means that the sides of the leaves become like a receptacle, and they push into each other. And the Meiri says the Kavatz is similar to what we're going to see by Tzinei Hara Barzel in tomorrow's daf. Saduk, or if it's cracked. Akum, domel magal, it's bent over like a scythe. Pasul, all of those are problematic. So here you have a list of things that are problematic with love. One of them is Nizdak. So how is it that Rav Huna is saying that Nizdak is fine? Charut, and if it's charut, then it is pasul, domel lecharut, kasher. But if it's similar to charut, then it's fine. Rashi says, what's charut? Charut means like chariota dekel, means it's hard. If it's hard, like wood, palm tree, after the year or the season is over, the leaves of the palm tree harden and become wood and then extend the palm tree higher. And they turn into a woody substance. So if it's already turned into wood, then it's problematic because it's no longer a lulav, it becomes a part of the eights of the palm tree. Then if it's hard like wood, but it's not yet charut, that is kasher. So Amar Rav Papa, the Ovid, the Himnik. That's a case where he makes it like a Himnik, which is a stylus which splits at the bottom, mifutzal, it divides. So where is it a problem? The duk over here means that it's split like a Himnik, means that it's completely separate. The spine is split in half, and it's as if you have two lulavim coming up over here. That's where it's problematic. And the nizdak, where it's kasher, Rashi says, is when the Roshe Alim, when the tops of the leaves are split. The Ritva, on the other hand, says it's kasher, when similar to Niktam Rosho, which is talking about the Tiomet, or the middle leaf, that if it's split a little bit, then that is fine. Well, there are other Rishonim that say that there cannot be any split in the Shidra or in the center line. Otherwise, it becomes like a Himnik, and therefore the Tiyomet and the Shidra have to be completely sealed. So now, Akum Domele Magal, bent over like a scythe, Amarava lo Amrana lo Fanav. That's only true when it's going forward. Abo lo Achurav, Briyate Hu. That's the normal way that it grows. If you hold in the lulav and the spine is facing you, lulav bends away from you then it's problematic. Because Rashi is like a hunchback. The spine's here, the hunchback, the spine is bent over forward, that's problematic. And then if the spine that's facing you bends towards you a little bit, that's the natural growth of a lulav and that's not problematic. Amar Rav Nachman, it's tzadidim, kilofanav dami. If it bends to the side, then it's problematic, like it is if it was hunchback forward. Some say, no, that's fine. A lulav, that if you look at the spine, all the leaves are on one side, they're all either to the right side of the spine or the left side of the spine, that's also problematic. A lulav, that's a pasul lulav, because it's a mutant lulav, and therefore you can't use it as a lulav. What comes out of here is, in terms of lulavim, if the lulav is split down the middle, so it looks like two separate lulavim, that's a sedek, that's a split, that's a himnik, which is problematic. There are a lot of people are choshish for that in the middle leaves. That's why we make sure that they are sealed together. The middle two leaves, the shidra, the main tiyomet, we make sure it's sealed together because of this problem of himnik. Number two is, if it's akum, if it's bent over, it depends which way it's bent. If it's bent in the natural way that it grows, that's fine. When the shidra bends towards you, that's fine. If the shidra bends forward, then that is a problem of akum, and you cannot utilize such a lulav. We also saw that a lulav that is a shidra where the leaves are imbalanced, that they're all to one side, that's also a problem of mutant lulav, and therefore it's no good, and you can't use it as a lulav. Also charut we saw, which is if it's completely dried out like a piece of wood, then it's no good to be a lulav. It's only dome le charut. If it only looks like it's dried out or feels like wood, if it's solid lulav, but it's not wood yet, then it's fine. The lulav doesn't have to be soft, but it just has, it can be hard, it can be solid, but it has to still be moist or green. It can't be yavesh. As long as it's not eitz yet, as long as it's not wood yet, then it's fine to use as a lulav. Okay, we'll stop over here.